Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Are you feeling a bit animated? Well, come on over to the Wicked Anime Podcast on the Nerdy Show Network, a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to animation, Japanese culture, and all things anime. With a true industry perspective, we're always diving deeper than school uniforms and tentacle monsters. Join us on the Wicked Anime Podcast, nerdyshow.com/wickedanime. It's Wicked A!
This podcast is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com. All right, guys, we're back. We have had a very eventful 2 weeks. After our last design episode, Doug and I went up to Asheville in North Carolina to AVL Scarefist. Scarefist. To AVL.
Scares me.
That's my next character name.
Scarefist.
AVL Scarefest up in Asheville, north of Asheville in Black Mountain. And it was good. It was a good time. It was just a little convention, close to 200 people. Ran a couple games, played a couple games, got some good feedback. Doug ran Ghostbusters and had a great game that I sat in on. I didn't play, but.
You were like my moral support. Just
yeah. Doug had never run it for strangers, so.
Hooking up for the first time, it's always awkward after a long-term relationship.
It's better when you have a close friend sitting there watching.
Yeah, no, I agree. But
from the closet.
Well, that's interesting. The thing I want to hear the most, Doug, you played the game you've been making for several months.
This version, yeah. Yeah.
Please just tell me everything, my dude. I want to know everything, man.
Doug played in both one-shots that I ran. And what are your takeaways from playing this game? And it's very much still in development.
It's a lot of fun, but I don't know how much of it was due to you making a really interesting scenario versus, like, the options that I had with the other players. Because I kind of wanted to see what the players did, too. So, like, I kind of sat back and played more of a support class. The first time we played, I played a Savathian eel man named Eugene.
Into it.
Who was core ice and one step of command. And that was a really good combo.
Ice anything is just.
Yeah, ice anything was.
And step one command anything.
Yeah.
Really, yeah. That's a really good combo.
It was fun. I mean, there's lots of details about the different choices the players made each time, and I was reacting to it, and, you know, I don't know. It was really good. And then when I was ready to make the second character, I'm like, okay, well, I've done that. Let's see, what can I do that's different? And I was looking at all the things. I'm like, yeah, but I really had a lot of fun doing ice. So I went core ice, step one ice, the second time around.
as a gelt.
Yeah, as a gelt badger man. And it was really good. Like, I was
the first
almost
time was,
worried.
I designed it for between 4 to 6 people.
Yeah.
And the second game, we had 3 people.
Yeah.
And they knocked it out of the park.
I almost felt overpowered, like, not to the point where I was really worried, but, like, I was worried I was about to be worried, because any time I was attacking anything, it was like, I feel like I have so many options. Like, I could throw an ice spear through, an ice javelin through this bad guy, or I could literally freeze him in the spot and get some of his friends behind him. When you add command into that, it was like someone else can take the shot for me. It was like, there was a lot of great options, and it reminded me of playing D&D, except all of the starting abilities were way more powerful and interesting. I don't know. It just it unlocked parts of my brain where I'm like, oh, man, I knew in theory that when you link these things together, you can get interesting combinations for characters. But when you put it into practice, it was like, oh, no, you really can, like, really mix it up and do something crazy. So I'm, like, really looking forward to playing again. And just, I would just pick 2 fucking things at random from now on. I just want to see. I'm just going to take, you know what? I'm going to do, roll the dice randomly. What did I get? Core? What did I get? Oh, fire? Okay. Zealotry? Great. Perfect. You know, I just want to see where it goes, because not only are the abilities that you get with your core and your first step in weird ways they work together in a way that you may not even really realize, but then you realize everybody has that with their own character, so now you are working with the other characters in weird ways.
Mm-hmm. So you can make really weird machines.
Yeah, like these weird Rube Goldberg machines where it's just like, both times we had, so I at first I was Eelman, which was, you know, Ice in Command, and we had a Krex the first time around. I forget which classes he did. I think he did Scoundrel.
It was Double Marksman.
First time was Double Marksman.
Yeah.
And then we had a, was it Gelt?
Fire Ice.
Fire Ice.
Yeah, it was an
that
otter,
was really good.
It was an otter, Fire Ice.
And then we had the Guff, who was Decay
Radiance.
Decay and Radiance.
Yeah, Decay Core Radiance Step 1.
And that was
You had a Fire Ice and Decay Radiance?
Yep.
Yeah.
Two for yin and yang.
Yeah.
Yep.
Decay Radiance was like, life and death in my hands. And that was a really fun, interesting thing. And then the second time we had another Krex, who was. Was he Scoundrel?
Core Scoundrel, Step 1 Marksman.
So, yeah. And then, so even when you had Marksman for one Krex, Scoundrel Marksman, still Krex, you're thinking, well, how different is that really?
One was a condor who liked to eat people, and the other one was a crow.
They couldn't have been more different in the way they played. It was crazy. And there was only one step different between them. So, seeing that and bouncing off of that, I don't know. It was very exciting at the potential for all the crazy combinations, and it made me want to think, like, oh, man, I almost want to reward players down the line for picking two things that don't really jive well at first and be like, well, if you keep going with these two, eventually you get something. I don't know. But it was, I don't know. I had a ton of fun and want to play again and just go nuts with character creation.
How did you feel about momentum and the practical application of it?
I only used it a couple of times.
Yeah, I don't think one shot's really to see that work.
Yeah.
We didn't have momentum the last playtest, so this is Doug's first.
Sure, sure. I actually never failed with a momentum roll. So I didn't get to suffer from it.
Yeah.
I always succeeded and it did really well. In fact, one time I spent momentum and I critted. So then I got that momentum point back and it was fucking sweet. But there was one player who was very unlucky who would keep spending momentum and kept failing. They had these epic failures. So I think in more of a long-term campaign where everyone knows each other a bit more and then some people having epic fails and stuff, having it carry over from episode to episode or story to story or session to session, however you want to word it, I don't know. It feels great. And I'm really familiar with the Ghostbusters brownie point system, so I'm already kind of familiar with the potential of it. But it felt riskier in a way, because even if you don't critically fail, but you just fail normally. So I liked that balance of it, where you really had to weigh whether you wanted to spend it or not.
Oh, I had my first failure. And
oh, yeah. No, we had a bunch of failures.
It sucked. I had my first momentum failure. Not fun.
but I also like it because having critical failures be just as common as critical successes, sometimes critical failures are way worse depending on who you are and what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that it balances it out. It just takes away that knocking that wind out of your sails.
Well, if it's an important moment where you're like, oh my God, our building is on fire and I can't jump to the next building rooftop safely, but there's a clothing line. I'm going to have to tightrope walk that. And you're like, I'm going to spend some momentum on that. Yeah. And you still fail that? Like, you've made a fucking mistake, dude. Like,
but it shouldn't just be, I'm going to spend momentum so I'm going to succeed. It should be, all right, guys, I don't know how it's going to go. I'm going to chance it. Like, it's got to be exciting.
Yeah. But it will feel like, even if you don't express it as a player, that emotion, making that choice
at the table feels that way.
Exactly.
And the players we were playing with seemed to enjoy the character and what they were doing, but they didn't feel comfortable with the idea that, like, I'm about to spend momentum, so here's how this goes down, you know, like kind of narrating themselves. I'm not sure how to, maybe we can put examples or whatever of ways that people would describe, but I don't want to dictate how people should play in that way.
I mean, they still seem to have fun. I don't think they understood that momentum was a chance for them to influence the story of the scene.
To shine.
They thought more of like, they tend to focus more on, okay, my character is feeling this, he's really angry, so he really wants to hit him, and then whatever. And I'm like, and that is valid, but it just, you have way more wiggle room for what
you
want to do.
I've been in too many games where it's like, okay, well, my character says to the guard, I'm going to go over here. Well, your character has to say it. Like, That's so much more interesting to me.
I have middling, like, if it's just like, hey, we're going to go over here. Like, if it's very pedestrian, I'm like, whatever. But if you're calling someone out and you're like, I insult him, I'm like, no, I want that insult, dude.
Gimme.
I almost feel like the better way to approach it is to be like, okay, so what do you want to get across?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so that way it gives them the opportunity if they want to go into it and be like, I want to be like this and this.
Yeah, but if you're a quiet, meek person who isn't really clever in real life.
You should
but you're playing this game. But you're playing a rogue who's like a badass, who's Han Solo. You should be safe and saying, I want to say something really clever and like really try to win him over and maybe something really witty. And then you roll the dice. I think that's fine.
No, I think it is too, because also if you break out of your shell, like the GM's job is to reward you with momentum. If you do. You know what I mean? Like that's part of it. Yeah, I thought it went well. We got some feedback. One of the feedback is I think it's too hard to die. And I don't disagree. I disagree in some cases, but I have to construct a scenario to make myself disagree, if that makes sense, because of the system we've created. It seemed that dying wasn't as big of a risk because the next person who could help you, their turn was immediate before you lost that five momentum.
Yeah.
Also, we don't have...
Only if you were close enough, though.
Yeah, but everybody was.
Yeah.
And I think it's likely that that will be true given the way that encounter design tends to work. I mean, splitting the party is generally frowned upon in these kind of games, with the exception of something like... Well, we split the party in Call of Cthulhu, but I was very much against it. and for good reason,
apparently. I wonder why.
Yeah, and I almost got fucking killed. So another problem we have is that we don't have a rule for what happens to you if you fall. Like, say you're on fire. You get to zero HP, you fall down. What's that fire doing to you?
Got to be losing momentum. Yeah.
Still burning you, in theory.
Right.
Are you able to roll?
Not if you're unconscious.
No, not if you're unconscious.
Somebody can roll you.
I do want to just rebuttal the it's too hard to die. So you're doing a... beginner level encounter.
Yeah.
I don't want death to be at your door. Like, I don't want death to be at your doorstep immediately in your first encounter as you're figuring out what I think is a more complex mechanical character than a lot of other RPGs at level one. We're like, by the third encounter, or no, it was even the second. Mm-hmm. Like, we had two people go down in a turn. From more than half health in a single turn.
Well, I'm not proposing increasing the difficulty. I'll explain in a moment. But I think also you might be in a minority there with that you don't want people to die that quickly. One of the most proud things about this convention that we went to is they had this giant wall of death.
It was a character graveyard.
Yeah, and where they would have little tombstones and they would write for their characters. There must have been 100 characters up there.
By the end of it.
And most of them died from an alligator death roll.
Yeah,
in the same encounter.
Okay. I disagree. You put
But I'm just saying in any other games, like if you did that and you were making a video game and you were playtesting it, and then you saw that the first thing the entire development team would go like, okay, so there's a thing there we now have to deal. Like that would be something to fix, not to celebrate.
I agree.
I don't know if the criticism was so much. In general, it's too difficult to die. Rather, it was too easy to save somebody because people went down.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they did.
You know, and I
think I agree with him there. Yeah. It was too easy to save somebody without healing.
Yeah, because like people, we were taking hits. So you know, and one we're taking a good amount of hits. People did go down. And like I said earlier, I feel that a lot of the abilities for everybody at the table was more advanced than the first time I played D&D. Uh-huh. So you're feeling more powerful than normal. You're taking hits. Oh, you fall down. Ah, don't worry. Literally the next turn, someone's just going to pop you back up again. So I think maybe that's what it was. Like, it was too easy to save somebody. And since I was the one who actually saved a person who went down, they were down to 3 momentum.
Yep.
And if he
was one of the people who was like, it might be too easy to live. He's like, because he thought he was dead.
Yeah.
And probably if you spent, because we gave him 15 momentum to start.
Yeah.
And he went down to 3.
Yeah.
Just from
being down. Yeah,
from,
yeah.
No, from spending it on abilities.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if you spend 12 momentum across 3 encounters and you don't you're earning momentum as this goes and you're down to 3 by the end, you guys know that's dangerous. Like,
that's beyond dangerous. That's terrifying. Like,
yeah. I mean,
I wouldn't want to get into a fight with 3 momentum. To be fair, I could be perfectly healthy oh, shit.
Yeah, but he didn't go down and have 3 momentum. He went down and stayed down for like a good round, maybe 2. So it shipped away.
Did he? That long?
He did.
Okay.
So I remember because he was like, and you were like, oh, and he says, oh,
and this
how long?
The healer.
Yeah, he was like, how long? How much momentum do I lose when I'm down for a round? You're like 5. And he goes, oh, and then that's when I glanced over at a sheet. I'm like, what are you? And he's like 3. I'm like, geez. So I had to run across the battlefield and do my best to try and get him up because he was the only healer in that game, and it was a very desperate situation. And I got lucky with my roll that I was able to stabilize him, and then he can get up, and he just healed himself.
So you're just like. countered your own point by saying you desperately had to run across the battlefield. Like, that created a story.
That's the thing. From my point of view, he was on fucking death's door, and I barely saved him. But from his point of view, it was like, well, once he stood me up, I healed myself, and I was back to normal again. And I'm like, from his point of view, sure. But it was still a tense moment.
So I think, though, what gets revealed is that we created these things with ongoing effects, and then when people fell down, they didn't do anything. And I do feel like that is kludgy. We need to we need to have something representative. And I was thinking, what about instead of you losing momentum, okay, what if the moment you hit zero, you fall unconscious, and the damage you take additional, once it equals your momentum score, you die.
Ooh,
so
okay.
Give us an example.
So maybe you take 5 damage per round.
You're also losing 5 momentum. They are approaching each other.
You're not losing the momentum. Just you have a death score that goes up.
Okay. Oh,
and then
okay.
Once your momentum is zero and you've taken as much damage as momentum you have, you're out.
I think that's elegant.
Because that way, when you get revived, you have the momentum back, but you can't spend it while you're down.
So in other words, you don't lose any momentum just from being down.
Right. You don't lose it. However,
it's your life bar, but it's not literally your life.
Kind of. But every round it comes to your turn, you add 5 to that score.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So
that'll still happen.
I get knocked down.
Quick.
Yeah. So it doesn't change the death mechanic as much, but you don't lose that momentum permanently, because if you get up, like, you kind of do want the story moments where you're like, somebody woke me up, I'm gonna spend fucking 5 momentum and just save the day.
Okay. What do you do when you fall down and you're not taking damage?
You add 5 to your score at the beginning of your turn.
Okay.
Every
so
round.
then you add the damage and 5.
Yes.
Okay.
So, no, you take 5 extra damage at the start of your turn. So you're still at 0, but it adds to your score.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's your moment, your death score.
So, if you're on fire, you're taking 5 damage. You take 5 and then 5 in one turn.
Yep.
Mm. Ooh, that's... All right.
So, okay. So just so I'm clear, let's say I have 15 momentum.
Yes.
I'm at 0 hit points. I go down.
Yeah.
If I'm not on fire and there's no effects around me, no one's attacking me, I have 3 rounds until I'm dead.
Yes.
Okay. But so with that same 15 points... If I'm taking 5 points of fire damage per round, and I'm losing 5 momentum points, but I'm not actually losing momentum, I have 1 round before I'm fucking basically dead.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's good.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
So poison, fire, all that shit.
Whatever it is.
Whatever ongoing effect. If you land in...
lava.
Acid.
Anything.
You know what? I'm going to say, if you're in 6 inches of water and you go down...
Yeah.
You're drowning now. Sorry, guy.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think drowning like fire, it adds a d6 every round, you know.
So it's a random amount of damage.
So fire, and if you're standing in fire and if you're drowning, we can make a random damage with adding d6s, but that's not that the we can come up with the amount of damage later that's specific to each
but just
thing.
The theory of it.
Yeah.
What if your player is wearing a snorkel?
Ooh, man, that's really good. Well, they're not drowning.
What if you're Hrod and your nose is just above, like,
then you're
above
not,
the
you're not drowning. Yeah. I mean, like, unless you land on your back.
Wait, just
really good.
Savathians breathe underwater, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So no.
And then they're immune to that. That's fine.
Yeah.
Whatever. Or if you're a fire mage, you're immune to a certain amount of fire damage.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like,
you get
work
that automatically.
Yeah,
whatever
that,
it would be.
That'll work too.
But you're still taking that chip damage from just, you know.
From just being down. Ripped, yeah.
Here's another thing. We were doing a thing where we had somebody roll and add their endurance to a roll to wake up. That was really kludgy and dumb. So we're not doing it.
Imagine slapping them. Like,
how about if you want to save somebody, you add their endurance to your roll?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the one who's dying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to save somebody, what do you have to roll to get them to stop losing momentum? 15?
At least?
Maybe 20?
I'm going to say...
Not natty 20.
So what skill am I using to...
I would say you would use your... it would be medicine, right? So you would add your intelligence and their endurance to it.
I'd say let's try it at 15, because I've 20...
May
be too high.
And you could get a trauma kit that adds 5 to this.
Yeah. How about this? Base 15, you have a trauma kit that can reduce that to make it... where you're an effective medic, essentially.
Yeah.
But if you have an ongoing effect... you add 5. And if you have multiple ongoing effects, you continue to add 5. If you're poisoned and on fire, you're pretty much fucked.
Yeah, because if I run over to someone who's on fire, I have the med kit! It's like, what are you going
to
do?
I also have
you got to put him out.
Yeah, yeah. Because if I start treating you, I'm going to catch on fire.
And if that's too harsh, then the next thing that we could do is you have to make 2 rolls. You have to put him out and then
get them up.
No, totally. Yeah, I think having the med kit should be useful.
It should be important.
I think if it adds plus five, let's say if I'm a medic, all right, mm-hmm. and I've got a 4 intelligence, and then you've got 3 endurance, all right, I'm adding 7 to this roll.
Yeah.
If I have a med kit on top of that, or trauma kit, we're calling it, I add another 5. I don't think 20 is out of, like, you
That's
should,
not ridiculous.
And
no.
if it's my talent, I roll twice and use the higher result.
Yeah.
I think
if
20 is not out of...
I just feel there's a lot of ifs there.
It's not that
there is a lot of ifs.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's not that you could easily build a character where 15 is, if not a given, something you feel super comfortable with. But it wouldn't be hard to build a party where the highest intelligence person is 2.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. Like, do we want to worry about party balance?
And if you're all stupid, then you deserve to die.
It's I don't think we need to worry about party balance when it comes to things that are inherent in even classes that can do enough damage where if you have enough of them, you're fine.
Mm-hmm. I want to do one shot where everybody's dumb.
You make like 6 characters and everybody just keeps dying. You're just like, okay, a new guy runs in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, what about what's going on in here? You guys need help?
That's Kelton. He's an idiot. He's so much fun.
Smart like a fox.
Yeah, okay. But it's just the attachment of that mechanic and making it harsh puts a heavier influence on one of the stats that I felt that we've been pretty good with generalizing them enough.
Okay, well, how about this? 15 to make them stop losing momentum.
Yeah, 20 to get up.
Maybe 25 and they open their eyes with 1 HP.
On one hand, I think it should be hard. Okay, so like...
Because I think you can hit 15 is not unreasonable even for a bad group. Like, you could do it, you know.
Without a med kit, and you're not that smart, and I'm running over, it should be difficult. Not impossible, but it should be difficult.
Well, you have 2 intelligence, they have 3 endurance, you have a 50-50 shot.
Yeah, and you have no med kit.
That sounds fine.
To stabilize them.
I think that... And you're not a medic?
Yeah.
And you have no med kit?
Right.
I think you got way worse than a 50-50 shot. I think...
About 15 to make them stop... And then,
yeah, this, and then, yeah, 25. That's to make them. That's to apply pressure and make them stop bleeding.
Yeah, they stop losing momentum.
But what about 25 to make them get up and give them a movement?
No movement.
Ooh, no, that's just too much, man.
Maybe a 30 to give them a movement. Just something to be like.
No. I think anything like it's not like you just like hit a button, they're healed to full. Like you don't hand them a senzu.
Well, I just like that we're doing. I don't want to say grimdark, but nitty gritty. Like you're not just relying on fairy magic to heal everyone. You have you've been in battles before. You kind of know how to stop everyone around you from dying. Like
you're playing a fucking scholar.
So you know,
no. Yeah. He's playing a shitty scholar.
Yeah. So like, but you haven't been in battles before. You were going into battle.
No, my guy is the only thing he knows how to do is battles. His uncle paid each and every one of his professors to pass him. You know why
he's
though?
A college quarterback
to get him out of the because. He would kill.
He's so annoying.
No, he would kill his uncle because he's supposed to be in charge of their tribe. But the uncle is smart enough to be like
rite of combat or whatever.
Yeah, he's an idiot. Let's get him out going off on adventure so he doesn't kill us.
All right, fair enough. But the
okay, yeah. Well, how about this then? Just so we have something testable, let's do 15 to stop momentum loss and stabilize them. But you have to keep doing it.
Yes.
Ooh.
And if you do it 3 rounds in a row, you stabilize them, then they can get up with 1 HP?
You have to make the success.
I think you stop them from losing momentum for 1 turn, if 15 or higher.
Yeah.
On a 20, they're good until they get up or...
At 20, you can walk away.
Yeah, at 20, you can walk away. What? 25, they awaken with 1 HP.
But they don't get up and they don't do whatever.
Well, that's on their turn. They can figure out what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That seems good. It allows for you to be confident that you're going to get the first one and still have an incentive to spend momentum
up. The other cool thing is if you go over there and you stabilize them, but you didn't like totally stabilize, like you have to stay there and the monsters are coming and you're in a desperate situation, you have to figure out who knows what they're doing. You know, like they have to come and relieve them. So like you saved them only long enough for the person who knows what they're doing to come over. That feels
you're
good.
A stopgap. Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually like that better than what we started with. So 15 to stabilize them for 1 turn. So at the start of their turn, they're not losing 5 momentum.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it takes a full attack action to attempt this.
Yes.
Like you've got to spend.
Yeah. You are not fighting if you're doing this.
Yeah, exactly. And if you get to 20, you stabilize them for the whole scene. 25, they wake up with 1 HP.
Yeah.
So they're knocked down. And we made it so that you could stand up as a move action and not provoke attacks of opportunity.
Did we?
Yeah. Well, kind of. We didn't really get a solid.
I thought that was only like a race feat.
No, that's a move you can do that will allow you to attack and move and do it. So what's the rule on this? Maybe if you want to stand up without provoking, you have to spend your attack action? Maybe that's like an attack action to do it.
Okay.
Okay.
You can whip around, you can back up, but it takes a lot more effort than just walking around.
But you can't actually attack it. You have to sacrifice your attack action to stand up. Okay.
I'm just imagining the worst scenario of like running in to save somebody who's surrounded and you're trying to heal them while you're all getting beaten.
That is exactly what happened in the playtest that you did where somebody got knocked down and you were being attacked by mages.
Yeah.
And, well, you had a crow on the roof getting sneak attacks, which is something we also need to talk about, how to maintain sneak attack from a distance, which we have not yet done. We came up with some rules on the fly that were pretty good, but he always had it. But then again, it was his talent, and he had the maximum bonus you could have.
And he made good arguments.
Good arguments for everything. And was just doing double strike sneak attack constantly against people. Mm-hmm. That is full
mopping
distance.
Them up.
Yeah, it was gross. That's how three people took down encounters. They took on two encounters at the same time because I wanted to turn it into a final encounter. You fall to zero HP.
Yes.
Immediately somebody does a check, and you awaken with one.
Uh-huh.
Does a condition persist?
Dazed or something?
We should come up with a list of conditions as well.
Roll for a random one?
That's always
have some benign ones, yeah, have like, some
like
heavy ones.
Like a broken limb, that kind of thing, yeah.
So here's the thing. How long, in theory, I know it can be very different. In theory, how long would one combat round be, like in real time?
It's always been 6 seconds in other systems.
So if someone takes an arrow and falls to zero HP and they fall down. That happens. So Liam, sitting here, just thwomp, arrow to the heart, he fucking falls down.
Uh-huh.
Within 6 seconds, am I going to go over, pull out the arrow, stabilize him, and I roll so well because of magic rolling or whatever, I get him back up on his feet with one HP all within, like in less than 6 seconds?
So picture it this way. Same argument. He gets hit with an arrow and falls down. You see this in the same moment. You run over there. And he's bleeding, you yank the arrow out, and you do something fast.
Right.
So the trauma kit might have, like...
Whatever, yeah.
Whatever. Like, just something to put on the wound real fast. So let's imagine, like, you're just putting pressure on the wound.
Sure.
That's it.
Until it gets to his turn.
Yes.
And then whatever. Yes. Then he gets up.
And we could have scalable trauma kits, too, right?
Yeah, probably.
And the reason why I brought that up is because I'm trying to think time-wise. Does it make...
The six-second rule is bullshit.
Yeah.
It is because time is elastic.
Yeah. Sure. But even ignoring the six-second rule, let's say even if it's 10 seconds, 20 seconds, literally the arrow hits him. How long realistically does me, the next person in turn, have to like run over there and do this?
I really think this is the point where you need to think of movies and books, and even if the situation takes longer, for the sake of gameplay and moving things along, it just happens.
What I'm really,
you're like, this is boring, stop it, go.
Right. What I'm really asking is, the literal next person can get lucky and immediately pull you back up again. Is that what makes it too easy? It would be stupid to say, no one can heal him for one round. That's ridiculous. But is it because if I got lucky with my roll, you're immediately... basically back up again.
I think so. I think that is the thing that reduces risk. I think that's the thing that makes it feel as though there's no consequence.
But how do we, even if the mechanic is the same, how do you make it feel like it's not that?
That's why I'm saying add a condition. The moment they reach zero HP, they get a condition.
Mm-hmm.
What is the condition?
Can't be broken bones because, okay, you're out of the game for 8 weeks.
Well, no. I mean, like, you're in a dungeon. You know what I mean? You got a broken leg. Somebody's got to splint it. Like, okay, well, all right. Now you move one quarter speed or whatever. Yeah. And
it's
then
time to
cut his throat. Made the cutthroat motion.
It's also, did you ever play any AD&D games?
No.
You would spend months in dungeons waiting whole days. Some spells took days to prepare. And I do have to say, that made that game awful and really boring.
So
and
let's
Jimmy
add that
loves
into
it.
Ours.
And we've already said that the magic doesn't heal bones,
of course,
right?
Jimmy
but then,
loves
but
it.
Then when you look at something like Dungeon Crawl Classics, where they're like, it's hard and you're gonna die, and it has stuff like this. That's what you love about it.
Yeah.
Which may not be our game. I mean, like that's, you know.
Well, what couldn't there in theory?
I'd much rather just have a character die than have a slow, limping, existential nightmare. Like,
haven't seen the sun in a month.
I disagree.
That's
I think
so
I would,
like,
as a player, I would love it. like, if my character has a broken leg now, and I'm like, all right, no, guys, you go on without me. And they're like, no, you're coming with us. And, like, try to find ways to be useful. So, that sounds great to me. But I love that idea.
Or couldn't we just make a ritual to heal your broken bone?
Yeah, maybe. Or medicine.
Like you don't just go, woo, your bone is healed, and it grows back like Harry Potter. I'm talking about, like, okay, I'm going to need the eye of an orc. I'm going to need the spleen of a fucking lizard man.
You have to get, like, a certain number of healed leg bones.
Yeah. You have to get a certain number. You have to find
something.
You have to find three non-damaged leg bones.
The same size as the one.
Yeah. Like, if you're in a dungeon and there's bones everywhere, you're like, all right, we have to find thigh bones. We can't find an arm bone. You can't find a head bone. I need a leg bone that would be about his size. I'm going to take those three of them and, like, Fallout repair style. Okay. I'm gonna fashion.
But you're, let's say you're in a dungeon. You're fighting goblins.
Right.
You're never gonna come across.
Exactly. It has to be. Yeah. It has to be under the right circumstances. You can't. Right. You couldn't do it in combat. You probably can't do it in certain locations.
I don't know. I love the idea of these conditions that, like, if you have a whole party and everybody has these conditions now because they've fallen down multiple times,
I think that sounds great. One dude has two broken legs. What the fuck is he going
to
do?
It's like they all owe money to the mafia.
it becomes the revenant of the game.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I've played Darkest Dungeon. That's where you derive fun out of it. But there is no other type of fun then. That becomes the defining part of the game.
Because I feel like people go down relatively rarely in our system. They really do. Like, especially in our campaign, people have only gone down, what, three times total?
Yes.
There's been a total of three times. We've done seven sessions against pretty difficult shit.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it's unreasonable to have been like, your arm is broken, or now you have problem breathing, you got respiratory issues until we can heal them. Like, I feel like that's, like, you have them for a week.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You know,
at least make broken bones higher up on the list.
Yeah. Maybe it's progressive.
Yeah.
Like,
second time you get knocked down in a fight.
Here's a question about magic. You can heal, like, flesh, but obviously you can't just, like, mend a broken bone. Like, what about regenerative properties? Like, let's say monster bites off my leg. Is there a way magically to regrow that leg?
You got to fashion a new leg.
But I mean, like, in theory, could you do a ritual where you could regrow my leg?
I think so.
Yeah.
And we'd, like, maybe you get wrong species, and it's just like you got a weird leg.
Or you fuck up at the roll, and therefore now you have the leg of a guff.
Yeah. Like, or it's an arm. Yeah.
Actually,
God, that would be great. I think it'd almost always have to be a Harad one. Because that'd just be a natural property of the reptilian nature.
It'd be easier. They'd be like, I want my guff leg back. And it's like, you know, I understand, but you've only got it. I could get you a Harad. That's what you got the money for.
Because they just grow. What if
you got both your legs taken off and you got Krek's legs, and then you could do blinding kick.
you need wings to do that, man. Or pseudo wings.
And the reason I bring that up is because it's like, if we're in a dungeon, say, and I've broken, let's just say I've broken both my legs. Let's just say. At what point does it become easier to say, you know what, cut off my legs and we're going to regrow them from scratch?
I think it should never be easier for you to grow a new one with magic.
Right.
Now, let's say you've gone through like a crazy-ass dungeon and there's all these corpses behind you.
Yes.
And there's like things that are magically powerful and stuff. You'd be like, well, you just cut it off and grow you a new one. And we've got all the materials here. It's like, fine. You've already actually done the work. You know, like, you could do
There's spare legs laying all over the place.
But yeah, exactly.
Does your leg take up a slot if you want to keep it? Is that a full slot or is that...
Oh, you mean like if you want to carry it around for some reason?
Because you're not going to just throw your own leg away.
Why not?
I would throw it away.
I would It's fucking broken. It's not going to heal once you cut it off.
I feel like if
Do you keep toenail clippings? What's wrong
with
you?
That's not my leg.
It would be functionally the same at that point.
I tore a hurrah.
Dude, compound fracture in your leg. And they're like, all right, we can cut it off and we can give you a dead Savathian leg. And I'm like, do it because there's no way I'm making it through this on this. And then it's like, all right, I'm going to keep that compound fractured leg just in, because.
It's
like,
your leg.
Not anymore. But now this is my leg.
It's not loot. You guys are weird.
But the idea is like, it's weird. Like,
I think
like,
you would eat it for power. Really.
Yeah. Okay. Like, yeah. At least that.
Because if you compound fracture in my leg, cut the leg off, get a leg that doesn't have a broken bone, cut it off, put it there. Now I'm just healing the meat, not the bone.
Okay, so right, you're
I can
in.
Walk.
Let's. You're in a cave.
I do want to get back to the mechanics, though.
Right, I'm just
saying. You're in a cave with your dirty ass battle axe, and like, just cut it off, cut it off, and heal it. What are the odds it's gonna heal right? Like, you're gonna have some wonky ass leg.
That's why I'm asking, because it would be. I'm just saying the desperation of that, like these extreme situations. Like, where does the magic begin and end? How can it help?
I think your leg would have to be like gangrenous and going to kill you for that to be the better option. Like,
if it's like, I need it now, because otherwise we all die. Yeah.
The fucking Balrog is after us.
Yeah. Or if you're just like a champion.
But even if you regrew, it would just, that would be weird for a while.
I'm not
while.
Saying regrow, I'm saying you do a transplant. Yeah. I don't know. But that's a topic for another time. I just wanted to bring it up.
That would be a hell of a momentum if you're a champion and you just cut it off. Let's go.
Let's not worry about how to cure these yet.
Yeah.
Okay, just let's talk about conditions. So what about every time you go down, if you are suffering from a condition...
You gain a new... It's
And
it's
you go down again?
Different level of condition.
You get a worse one, and then a worse one, and then a worse one. Maybe, like, broken limb is, like, step three.
Yeah. So or even two, because it could be, like, concussion, bruised ribs, sprained ankle.
Respiratory problems.
Just, basic
collapsed
stuff.
Lung. Yeah. Like,
allergies. Yeah.
No. So maybe just like chaos dice, it's you got six options, and you roll and see what happens.
And maybe one of them is, you got off scot-free. That ain't going to happen a whole lot. Actually, with 1 in 6, that's too good. That's too good of a shot.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's a scot-free
version. No, there's not a scot-free.
What about, if you fall down like three times, you're done. You're fucking up.
What about idle hands?
Oh, man. Actually, also this. If there's a fourth step, you're just dead. Your body's taken. You're in shock. You're done.
I don't know. I feel like maybe four steps is the max, and you're just like, now you got two broken legs.
If you get a necromancer's hand and you botch the thing, if the necromancer's hand just starts like, having its own actions, taking over, like just doing its own thing.
Maybe like you get so close to death, you get possessed by something.
Yeah,
you're open.
Oh,
to
that could be fun.
Shit, yeah. I'm just picturing like someone who's getting the shit beat out of them so bad, like you become Indiana Jones after he was dragged behind the truck, or John McClane like after he walks over the glass, you know, or is at the end when he's stumbling out. Like, what kind of ongoing thing can you build, you know, instead of just, all right, collapsed lung, broken leg, you know, whatever.
Maybe something like internal bleeding. At the beginning of your turn, every turn you take 1 damage. Something like that would be like a good first starting one. Or dazed
that's a way weirder. I was thinking something minor that it would just be very purposefully not a damage effect, but a functioning effect. And then you would move to major functioning. And then you would move to damage. And then you would move to long-term permanent.
Where you lose a limb.
Yeah.
Like your head. I was thinking...
That is when you're just straight up dead. Yeah, you're done.
I was thinking, something where the scale is small and the scale gets larger. So, like you could have small internal hemorrhaging, like I was saying. It's like 1 HP. Or you could have, like, a respiratory issue where you can only move half your speed because you'll run out of breath. And if you move more than half your speed, you can still attack, but you do half damage.
I'm just thinking if you come out of the dungeon with one of the characters' heads ritualistically just in a box.
I would say reduce dodge rather than damage.
Because you could just give him back another box. Like, don't worry, man. We got you. We got your head. It'll be fine.
But then you could have dazed where you just take -2 to everything.
Yeah.
Like, you just... Yeah. Everything's -2. But then put a short time limit on all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, the time limit is based on...
Your endurance?
Well, I feel like it would be a medicine check.
Yeah.
Like, people would... the medicine check would be like, at the end of the day, everybody can make... Like, somebody can make a medicine check to check you out and try to help you cope. And then it's gone after 3 days.
Yeah.
or depending on what it is.
Yeah, depending.
Successful medicine checks.
Yeah, sprained ankle. You wake up the next day, you're mostly fine now. You had a good hearty rest.
I don't think a sprained ankle is
ever they going to do that. You're
no,
right.
My sprained ankle. I can't go adventuring.
I think that's if you're like, I want to attempt a jump roll and I'm going to spend a momentum and I failed. Like you're like, oh, you sprain your ankle and fall down and take 1d6 HP.
You were trying to walk on your hands to entertain children.
Yeah, and now until the end of the scene, you move one space less, and it's nobody can make a check.
It just
anything for your ankle.
Puts more emphasis on camping and everything like that. I think it's great. You actually have to stop and do things, and you have a bedroll. You're more comfortable. You have
a better rest. Yeah,
you're not laying on the ground.
Yeah. So you get knocked down, but you get up again. They're never going to keep you down.
God damn it, Doug.
Is there basically no effects at first, but if you get knocked down again, that's when you start feeling dazed?
I think you need a mild condition the first time you get knocked down.
Yes.
Because there needs to be consequences.
Like a concussion.
Yeah, like a concussion, which I think would be dazed, right? So we'll say concussed.
Yeah.
Because it could have been like, and it's like, well, he hit me with a spell. It's like, yeah, well, you might have hit your head on the ground.
Yeah.
If you hit hard enough, yeah. Concussion, you can't rest, so you can't get a full rest.
So what are mild ones? So concussed.
Yeah.
Then shortness of breath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you got a swollen face, maybe you can't see. Like if your eyes are swollen shut. Like
blind is harsh, man.
But it's not saying blinded.
Not blind, but like your blurry vision.
Blurry vision.
Yeah.
Blurry
vision.
But that's concussion symptom too.
Yeah. Like that would disproportionately affect ranged characters.
Yeah.
Like an Apocalypto when he cuts over the eye.
Which is fine because some of these are going to disproportionately affect me. Like
oh,
not,
it's true.
Not being able to walk that far. For a lot of ranged characters, that's all right.
Okay, so we have concussed, shortness of breath, blurry vision. I would say,
he's even bleeding profusely. Just like
in our current language, healing closes wounds, so it stops bleeding.
Yeah,
right. So like, say somebody hits you and you start bleeding. Burning Ray can stop the bleeding.
Yeah,
it'll like close wounds, but it's not going to do what medicine does. So maybe like a mild infection or something, where you take minor damage.
Yeah, that's also great because it's not a wound. It can't be closed up.
Or like deep ache. You know, like that's.
Achy joints. Shingles.
Oh,
I got cradle tap from a battle.
Mesothelioma.
If you know somebody suffering from mesothelioma. What would you call it if your joints just ache, other than arthritis?
Ooh, your bones are acting up.
Rheumatoid.
There you go.
Storms are brewing.
Jaundice.
Just joint damage. Or wear and tear.
I like wearing tear.
Pulled muscles. I don't know.
Yeah, pulled muscle.
Pulled muscle does suck, and it sucks
Charlie
for
Horse.
A while.
So we'll say pulled muscle is you take 1d4 damage every time you move. No, just one damage. You take one unmitigated damage every time you move.
Because 1d4 is a dagger strike, and I pulled a muscle, and it hurts.
What about getting the wind knocked out of you?
That's shortness of breath.
Shortness of breath.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, because if you get the wind knocked out of you bad, you don't want to move anywhere.
No.
So we got four. We got concussed, shortness of breath, blurry vision, pulled muscle. Maybe like gun shy, where you're just a little shaken, you know, like from the experience of almost having died.
Yeah, after you go down like a fourth time.
Shell shocked.
Yeah.
What would you call it? If you
they used to call it battle fatigue. And,
PTSD. But not PTSD, but like not post-traumatic stress disorder, but mid-traumatic stress disorder, where it just happened and you're like, sudden fear, shaken?
Just shaken.
Or panic.
I think panic seems more frantic rather than cautious.
Yeah, like you're gun-shy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shaken, and we just need one more. Where if you go down and you get back up,
so are we going in like in an increasing order of like badness here? Of like, okay,
no. These are all just 1 through 6. You roll one, you get.
Oh, we're the random one. Okay. What are some injuries we've had in real life?
How about hallucinations?
Ooh. 1 out of 6 seems a little high for hallucinations.
That seems deeper down the line.
Auditory hallucinations,
maybe.
I mean, like it would be a cool story moment if. In theory, it'd be a cool story moment. Someone gets hit so hard, and they're getting up after another time, and they see a hallucination. Tell me what your hallucination is. It's like, I see my dead spouse, and they're saying,
sure,
get up again. You can do it. Like, that's cool story-wise, but to have that, like,
to have
theory,
that at step one
happens
injury
to everybody.
Huge.
Yeah, like, suddenly everybody's hallucinating. It's like, what's in this dungeon?
Water on the knee.
Paranoia? Paranoia, where you can't gain the benefit of ally effects other than healing.
I was gonna say, what's something that's in world like the decay or something like a touch of death, something that like
But that's also weird. Yeah. One, it's random, and it's not connected to what does it to you, so that would be weird. Like,
true.
Oh, man, I fell out of a tree and knocked myself unconscious. Yeah,
suddenly
I have touch of death.
Yeah, suddenly animals fear me.
I think I fell out of an apple tree. I think I kind of like the idea of paranoia, where you can't benefit from ally buffs. You can just receive healing from them.
Oh, I would even say that they need, now your ally needs to roll to hit you to heal you.
Ooh. Slap you.
I feel like that's a step two thing. Like,
I was gonna say this might be too much, but like a battlefield confusion where for a split second you think your ally is an enemy.
So that, I like that, but that's further down the line, because that could be multiple people's deaths.
Yeah.
More than just like a small.
But that also, because that's so terrifying, that needs to be or you need to be able to get out of that one quickly.
Or if it's simply like an automatic reaction. So I come over and I heal Liam, and you roll the dice and you got the one of whatever word,
and I just
call
lash
it,
out,
and you just lash out with an arm, and then it's just basic attack, just not like magic, not like whatever, it's just a basic like punch attack. If it lands, it might do a punch, but otherwise, you know what I'm saying? It's like a wild thrown punch.
I guess
it isn't.
It's different. It's different than just I'm blurry and I can't see. Oh, I half speed. It's
right,
just,
but I think these are all consistent, which is good for step one. You fall down. And these all have different durations as well. So what you don't want, I think, of all of these is to be concussed, because that'll have probably the longest duration of any of these.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got concussed, shortness of breath, blurry vision, pulled muscles, shaken, and paranoia. I think concussed is going to be
terrible.
If you fall down again while you're concussed, like it's going to be you're more at risk for a longer period of time.
Uh-huh. So you're going to say
the thing is the duration of a concussion is huge, but it directly affecting you to that amount isn't
right.
So this is just the table of things we roll on for the first time you go down.
Yes.
So the second one, okay, then
we can save that for next time.
Yeah.
So I just want to do the step ones. We'll play around with our new changes to death and dying and the new conditions that we added.
Could step three be like amnesia?
That's a good one.
Dude, that's not a bad one.
I like that one a lot.
I love the idea that you have to do something crazy to get rid of that.
And that's when you can see the hallucination. We can do step three's hallucinations and amnesia. Yeah. Well,
That's almost not a bad idea.
I feel like broken limb's a good one for that one, too.
Yeah, broken limb's a good one, or even adding in one or two ones that have long-term story-affecting things but don't really affect gameplay is fun to kind of offset how fucking terrifying breaking a limb is going to goddamn be.
Because your strength, your endurance would not be affected by amnesia, but
your ability to interact with anyone and get anything done immediately afterwards.
If you get knocked down three times, those should be big story moments.
Yes.
So breaking a limb, hallucinating, attacking your own allies, amnesia.
Yeah.
These are big story moments.
All right. So I'm just going to leave it at those three because we got other stuff to talk about. So, okay. New topic.
Yes.
Is Burning Ray too powerful?
Maybe.
Should it be a die 4 instead of a die 6?
Or a d12?
It didn't feel overpowered.
It seems like to me. Okay, and Poole's playing somebody with Burning Ray right now.
Yes.
The both one-shots we ran at AVL Scarefest, it seemed like Burning Ray was obligatory. They had to use it constantly.
Yeah, currently how many dice for Burning Ray?
1d6.
And you're talking about taking it to 1d4?
Yes.
It doesn't seem like that big of a difference.
I also feel like...
Pretty big damage per turn you can take and then be stocked up on.
I am doing a thing now in encounter design. I want to talk about that for a moment, where I think the real key to providing the feeling of progression isn't just by increasing enemy hit points, but it's damage. I know that seems obvious, but what can happen when you increase enemy hit points is that combat takes longer. When you get into 5 rounds, now you're starting to get into long combat territory, right? So I feel like maybe try to design for average damage to around 5 rounds, unless it's a boss encounter, can go a little bit longer, but you don't want it dragging. And there were parts during the Howard's encounter that I thought, this might be taking too long with 5 people and fighting 2 enemies.
Mm-hmm.
I upped their damage, which I thought was appropriate, but they rolled like shit for a while.
Yeah.
As you gain HP, I feel like their damage should be increased by that much at the same time. So you can go back to the simpler monsters and you have simpler encounters and you will notice how powerful you've become.
Mm-hmm.
But when you fight somebody difficult, it's like, oh shit. Like
they hit
hard. Like we really got to bring it together.
Well, that really works because there's the only progression that we've had in characters is damage and HP.
Yes. which I think is good.
Yeah, it's fine right now.
I don't really... Well, and number of abilities and how they work and stuff like that.
Yeah, but that's... It's just that's harder to define.
Sure.
Didn't we say... For Burning Ray, didn't we just say that maybe you start with a D4, but then you take the next step and it becomes a D6?
Maybe. See, I like...
Well, the whole thing
I'm
is...
I'm about to ramp up damage for enemies in our campaign.
Healing's got to scale with that damage, though.
It will. So do we start it at a D4, and then at step 4 it goes up? And maybe at step 4...
It becomes a D6?
Becomes a D6. But is that good enough at step 4? I don't think so.
I don't... Yeah.
All right, let's leave it as it is, because it's very good, but I do feel bad that the healer feels like that's the only thing they can do.
Yeah. There's also a situation... There's been... at least 3 situations where if it wasn't as good as we were, the random chance of just getting hit twice in a row, mm-hmm. and not having that, everyone but Kelton could be two-shotted pretty easily.
So what about an alternative ability? Because the only thing we've got right now is Prayer Strike.
Yeah.
As an alternative way to heal people. It's not the question of is healing Ray too good, but are the other options too poor?
That's probably true, and there's only one.
Because Prayer Strike has the potential to be super good. It could be way better than Burning Ray if you use it and then spend a daily.
Yeah.
However, because you're one thing behind...
It feels less immediate.
Yeah. This is probably too good. What if Prayer Strike was a feature where half of the damage you deal every turn goes to one character?
That's way too good.
It's way too good?
You can build a monster... If you go to a damaging class.
And then why would you play anything else?
Yeah, why would you not play something that heals and then you build your max damage machine?
Yeah. Okay, so that is too good. So how do we...
Could you use that for like lifesteal? To where damage an enemy, you could...
Well, you get back the HP that you deal, and then the damage that you deal gets split in half and split between two allies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's how it works.
But more of like
which
building
is solid.
Up. You know, building up lifesteal and then able to burst that out.
Hmm.
So kind of storing the lifesteal.
Maybe.
Because if you do enough damage and then you're like shooting that off into your party.
Well, but it's also a situation where the only thing that heals at all is decay with lifesteal. So
yes.
You have 3 in total healing abilities all paths.
Well, no, that's not true. There's other abilities that heal.
Are they in Radiance and Zealotry?
Per scene, yeah.
Who has the vampiric one?
Decay.
Yeah. But I mean, there's a racial feature, right?
Ashwin. Yeah, the vampiric heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it has to scale somewhere else.
Maybe just a whole new ability.
Yeah. Well, if you go core radiance, there's another healing ability.
Yeah.
That nobody has ever picked, as well as martyr.
So this isn't even for the core. This is, step one? This is a step one ability
step
we're talking
one,
about?
Step one, yeah.
Maybe it's just, if it's a step one... And you're not doing core, maybe taking it down to a D4 is fine.
Because if you
take core and then step one, you should be rewarded for doing that.
Here's the thing. This might illustrate that it might be overpowered. Let's say we all make our characters and we all agree that we're all going to go step one
radiance.
Right?
Yep.
We're all going to do it. And then that's fine. We'll build up the momentum, take the step down the next thing we want. But that's it. Step one radiance. That way, every turn, we're going to heal each other.
Yeah.
Yep.
If we have to. I feel like...
But that's a choice you're making.
There's also a direct counter to that, which is armored targets. You can just start throwing armored targets at them, and that's going to be not very effective very quickly.
I don't know. I don't think it'll change anything about its effectiveness because
won't be able to damage like
the Burning Ray won't.
Yeah,
but I'm core scoundrel. I'm still right. going to sneak
everyone's
attack.
Everyone's
going to
keep everybody up. That's the thing. Like everyone, if everyone's able to heal everyone.
But then again, I mean, this has always been the problem in RPGs. We all know the team of clerics in D&D
awesome.
would roll everything it came across.
And if you don't make the healing class appealing enough, someone's just going to make a damage monster because it feels better.
And the reason why you went with D6, I think, was because you wanted to make them feel like they were making a big difference. They wanted to make them feel like they were doing something.
Okay, so then let's leave it for now, and let's think about how it scales with the increases to enemy damage and when it should increase, because maybe it being too powerful
at step one is not that big of a deal.
Yeah, when you at character creation is not that big of a deal. But you know, if I've gone 5 steps and then I dip into radiance, maybe healing Ray is just like
it's barely doing anything anymore.
A D6 to a D8.
Yeah, but now I'm at step one radiance.
Right.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And I'm step 8 champion, and I want step 1 radiance. Is that pissing in the wind when I cast it? It might be.
Yeah.
So maybe it is fine. All right. Well, we'll leave it, but I like that it's brought up. We can think about this during gameplay. The decay shadow ability, it can provide the upper hand, but if it can't attack, is that as useful as we want it to be given our new changes to upper hand? Because it's only providing it to somebody else. Because here's the benefit of the upper hand. Let's say I'm the tank, and I'm the only person in combat with the bad guy.
Yeah.
And I put the shadow behind the bad guy. Bad guy has no reason to attack the shadow.
True.
So what benefit would I get from having the
upper hand? Well, didn't we say that it wasn't even that they want to attack a shadow as much as they feel a presence behind them and they think they're flanked?
But even then, what difference does it make? Because the only benefit that I get from having the upper hand is if they do something that doesn't include me, I get to attack them. Mm-hmm. But why would they?
I still don't want it to attack, but maybe just have opportunity attacks?
What if... I was going to say, what if it does malediction damage? But then again, you have to be core decayed for that to work.
Mm-hmm. Could it debuff them or something?
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe an opportunity attack that does something else.
Yeah.
Maybe a distraction.
Yeah. You could say a shadow falls over them. And suddenly they're like, oh, and then, you know.
You know what? Maybe it does an opportunity attack. It rolls with your stats, and it just does a die 6 plus your intelligence. That's it.
Yeah. Not crazy.
Yeah.
But better than nothing.
You can have it attack. It has 0 HP. So the moment it takes a hit,
it's gone.
It's gone. But you can have it walk out there, and yeah, I feel like that's fine. That's fine. Because in one turn, if you're close enough, you can always get it to where you want it to be.
Yeah.
So does it have a turn? I can't remember what
it's
was
your
going.
Turn. It's your turn.
It's your turn. I was going
to
say.
Yeah, you could spend your move action to move it. You can spend your attack action to attack.
If it had a turn and you could switch places with it, that would be.
That's late game.
Yeah. That would be.
Okay, so it has a melee attack that it tries with your bonuses.
Yeah.
It's using your dex and it does a d6 plus your intelligence.
All right.
Ability we gave champions to spend their move action with piercing weapons to increase their range by one. I said it was flange. I couldn't remember. The term I was thinking was flench, but that's actually not even what that is. That's a running attack.
Okay.
So it's the closest thing I could think of.
With the shadow. So what is the idea now? The shadow actually does do an attack?
It can do a melee attack. It attacks with your dex bonus, and it does a d6 plus your intelligence as damage.
Instead of it being swinging a punch or doing a T-1000 stabby arm, what if you want your shadow to do damage, you have to explode it? So in other words, you send the shadow out, but when you're ready, oh shit, I need it to do some damage, you do the damage, but the damage cancels it out. So in other words, like it'll do the damage, but then it's gone, and you have to cast it again.
That is not going to be more effective than the ranged attack of someone already that far down
that
path.
You would never choose for it to do damage outside of a specific situation where you couldn't see it.
I'm saying the value of the damage is the same, but just the idea of once you do that, that's a sacrifice, and if you want, it's not going to still be standing there after it does an attack.
What we're saying is that you would never do that.
That would never come up.
Yeah, you wouldn't choose to spend your attack action to do that when you could just hit it with something else.
That would do more damage, and you would still be able to provide the upper hand to friends. You would never use that to attack. All you use.
So I see what you're saying, because the whole idea is just that if you hit it with a simple melee attack from behind,
it's gone.
But it's still there, though. The shadow is still there it's providing.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, if it hits, yeah. But if you hit it,
yeah, it vanishes.
Right. Just because the idea is that if it hits you, and then suddenly the villain is like, what the fuck? And then it turns, and that's what's presenting the real bonus that you're not getting from just attacking from a ranged attack?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, I made some changes to the step 3 stuff that we did, and we're going to have to go into further, just round out step 3 later, because I found some small issues. Command, our battle cry ability, where it gave people bonus, changed it to delegate, which is it's a swift action. You give your composure to a single ally to their damage or a single skill check until the start of your next turn. Once per scene, you grant it to everybody.
Okay. That is dope.
So before it was, you just do it and everybody gets it who can see you. And now it's one person on your turn until the start of your next turn. And once per scene, you can do that thing. And we don't have a feature for that one. I'm not sure if we need a feature for the ones we don't have features for, because that one's pretty good. But it's not as good as Shadow, you know?
Not even close.
So we'll need to do some more stuff.
Is any...
Yes.
Champion as good as Shadow?
Decay Shadow, change it to Shadow Servant, but a different name would be cooler, and swapping places is now a move action once per scene.
That works.
Doesn't have a feature, which I don't think it needs one.
It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Fire Flaming Orbs, maximum range is 20 spaces. You can move as many of them as you like, but you split your move action among them.
Mm-hmm.
Should we change it so that you can create a number of them equal to your composure, so that you can? So if you only have one composure, you can create one.
Yeah,
that sounds. That seems reasonable.
Yeah, because all those are so
only.
Much cooler.
My only problem with that is, as a fire mage, if you're core, you're going to dump strength. That's the only thing that makes sense.
You could have three. You know, 3, 2, 1, intelligence, composure, strength, and through racial abilities or whatever. Because creating two fire orbs is still really good.
Yeah.
So that
is not anywhere close to shadow. Like, that's so far away from shadow, though.
You think so? Because on your turn, you can hit somebody with all three of them.
Yeah.
Like, from anywhere within.
If you have three composure, which is going to require you to either sacrifice strength or intelligence.
Yes.
So you're going to hit considerably, like, not considerably less, but 5% less, and for 2 less damage.
I don't hate it, but maybe we can give them a feature. I like the idea that it could be equal to your composure only because you could increase it over time.
That's fun.
You know what I mean? Like, you could get up to 5 composure if 5 orbs. Yeah. That sounds awesome. Like, so maybe it can start off lower, and then you decide when it gets better, that kind of thing. You can decide, I want to put through 1 in composure, get an extra orb.
Or even can be a feature later.
Maybe.
Like one of the late game features is going to be like, hey, you get these 3 bonuses to things you already have. They just get minorly better.
I'm thinking that might be something we do with step 4.
Yeah.
So these are just the revisions I did to it. We need to go back through and boost up things that aren't good enough and maybe nerf things that are too good.
Yeah. And command and Citadel are ones.
Granting one is.
So ice sculpture, once per turn, you may create an object your size or smaller without any moving parts that you know the precise shape of. You may create a maximum number of these objects equal to your composure.
Mm-hmm.
These objects are visibly made of ice, but are as durable as their non-ice equivalents. If you fall unconscious, they persist until the end of your next turn.
Okay.
Before shattering. And you may shatter one as a swift action.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
that's super useful, actually.
It's very useful, right? There's no damage. There's nothing like that. But you're like, you could think of great ways to use it.
Oh, but also just a lot of situations where like, I made an axe. Something that isn't my friend picked up that axe. No, you don't.
Yeah.
Or ice dagger in the chest. Now it shatters.
Prop a door open with it. Have it close,
that kind of stuff.
Very cool.
Marksman, bank shot, have it as, if there is a hard surface in range, you may fire at it to force your projectile to change direction to hit a target. For each bounce, the weapon or ability's damage is reduced by 1 die size. If it would be reduced below 1d4, it does no damage. The projectile can only move a maximum number of spaces equal to its normal range. So if you're firing, I was thinking, is this unfair?
Did you make any change to that?
Well, it's the language is more concise.
Okay.
So I feel like if you're firing a strongbow and you put 2 in strength to be able to fire this thing, and you do a d12, it's not dumb that you'd be able to bounce it off more things.
No.
And no, we don't have a feature for that one yet. Radiance, cleansing light, you remove 1 magical effect from a creature. This can also be used to purify food and drink. No changes for that. That one's really good. It needs something to boost radiance more than that, though. And Scoundrel traps change to Trapper, in quotes. And it's and it's a feature, not an ability. So you gain the ability to create traps as an attack action as long as you're carrying the appropriate materials. In combat, you may spend an attack action to create a simple trap that deals 1d6 of damage or one that trips an enemy when they step on it. Additionally, traps created out of combat may store 1 at will or per scene non-targeted spell if intentionally cast to do so. When trap is triggered, the caster of the spell makes the associated roll. Each trap takes up a single slot, and it requires a move action to make a sleight of hand check to place them discreetly.
God, I want to put Fire Blast in that so bad.
Fuck that, dude. Flaming Pillar.
Oh, yeah, that's not target. I think that's a target.
It is a target.
Yeah.
Maybe remove non-targeted. They have to step on it, and it attacks them. It doesn't matter.
They step, and the star just goes...
That's a daily. That definitely don't do that. That would be awful.
At will or per scene. Okay, so let's take away non-targeted.
I could give it back to you.
Because the target, it's on the space that they step on.
And maybe say no raise? Because that's a single space targeted, though.
Yeah. No, I think it's... Let's play around with it.
All right.
It's kind of cool for him to drop a... Like for Nesbitt, if he ever goes Scoundrel, to drop a trap and... Somebody steps on it, and then you have to roll to see if your spell
hits. It
just
explodes,
yeah. I think that's cool. Okay.
And if it fails, Nesbitt's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. You piece of shit spell.
Your piece of shit trap.
And we still need anything for Zealotry.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have anything. So that's where we are. That's the State of the Union on this. Was there anything you guys wanted to talk about?
Boats.
Ship combat.
Oh, I thought you really? Just meant boats in general.
Yeah. So that was something that came up just theoretical while we were at the convention. Boats, how do they work?
So here's a
displacement.
This is something I've been talking a lot about is ship combat. I'm playing it in Starfinder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it is its own game.
Yes.
Which means that it's not the game I wanted to play.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not a bad game. The mechanics are fine. It does work.
Yeah.
However, since it's so focused on being in the ship and your role in the ship, you're no longer playing your character.
Mm-hmm.
The only times I've seen things like ship combat work in Dungeons & Dragons and, well, this kind of style of game is almost when whoever is driving the ship is playing the ship game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to steer the ship, somebody needs to be at the helm, and that person is moving the ship. But everybody else is literally their character on the ship moving around performing actions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And medieval ship combat was, you know, kind of like Vikings slam into each other, and now it's a fighting platform. Like, you just create a battlefield, you slam into each other, and then you fight. Because whoever wins.
We don't have cannons, and the maximum range of any spell right now is 50 feet.
And 80 feet for an arrow?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you have to.
Yeah, they got to get in really close.
And you have probably, to.
Yeah.
Ship combat in our system, like, you could have siege weaponry on a ship, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, 'cause we don't have cannons, we don't have gunpowder, anything like that. You could have siege weaponry on a ship, and it will still, whoever's using it has to use their dexterity to try to hit with it, and the ship maybe has hit points and that kind of thing.
You don't have 30 cannon launch.
Like, no.
You don't have.
And also, you want the whatever's happening on the ship to be its own little drama.
Yeah.
You don't want to just be like, okay, now it's my turn for, you know, the gunner role on the ship. It's like, where's your character standing on the ship? Oh, are you at the, you know, spot? Can I reach him with my spell? Go ahead and try. That kind of thing.
Oh, if you could take out their rigging with a fire.
That'd be dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I sails.
Oh, no, screw that. Rogue Star into a ship. Mm-hmm. Just.
I feel like, okay, so.
Send your shadow to their ship.
But I feel like you try to send your shadow and just falls in the ocean.
It doesn't weigh anything.
Well, no, but it doesn't. It's cast on things. Like, it'll just cast down into the water.
God, the rogue teleport, though, onto another ship.
Yeah.
Surprise, motherfucker.
Well, that's decay, actually.
Oh, yeah. Decay, sorry.
But that's only four spaces.
Yeah. The thing that we wanted to avoid with ship combat is roll to see if you hit the button. You didn't hit the button. You know, something that should come naturally to you.
That's stupid.
If we can focus on the layout of the ship is important.
Uh-huh.
Definitely.
So what we're looking at when we're looking at our battle mat is the ship and what you're doing. And the DM is describing what's happening with the other ship and how many of them there are. And you can maybe use like little representations. But positioning shouldn't be that big of a focus because we're in a magical thing. Everybody's a 360-degree cannon. That's not that big of a deal. You being able to broadside somebody doesn't really mean that much in this world.
But for future versions of this, in a modern version or a sci-fi version.
If you're going to use something that involves you shooting something at something else, it's a ranged attack. And the weapon you are using has its own stats and attack.
Yep.
Ships have a certain amount of HP before they break. And that's...
Yeah.
I feel like it doesn't have to be any more complicated than that. We should be focusing on our characters.
But if there are, you've made a magical cannon in your homebrewed campaign, and now I run up to the magical cannon. Now I'm not running around on the ship anymore. That drama is gone. And now I'm just doing the cannon thing again.
Disagree. I think that you're like, I want to use that magical cannon. It's like, okay, cool. You run up to it. All right, here's a card for what it can do. And you're like, cool. I'm going to try to operate it. And you're like, oh, okay, swing it around, and I'm going to shoot. It's like, okay, well, this ship is hard to hit because it's captain.
It's a new spell. So it's almost like a new spell that you're getting. Like, here's a card like that says what it is.
The ship has a dodge rating based on its how agile it is, okay?
Yep.
And the person driving it adds to it with their dex.
Fine.
Sure.
So maybe like maybe it's very low, right? So like ships have like a dodge rating of an 8, and the captain gets on and he adds his dex and intelligence to it. So now that ship dodge rating, so people make attacks against that. And so the base dodge amount is what changes.
Ooh, trying to just hit the captain of the other ship, focusing on the captain.
Yeah, they'd really have to be within range, though.
Yeah. Well, I'm assuming all the combat has to be within 50.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I'm saying if you want to use like a cannon or a magical cannon, like in Doug's scenario, you would say, okay, this cannon can shoot this far. It does this much damage. You use your dex to try to shoot the ship and beat the ship's dodge rating.
And a cannon doesn't do any damage to a ship. It's all the fleshy people on the ship.
Maybe.
That was the whole point. When it hit the ship, all that oak would explode and kill the people. And then they would just keep doing that until everyone was dead.
I really don't want to deal with cannons right now, but I feel like the solution for that is pretty simple. So I think we have a pretty elegant solution to creating dodge ratings for ships,
mm-hmm.
right? So whoever's piloting, so yeah. not captaining, piloting. The captain can provide bonuses to things, maybe. Skill checks, right? So
yeah.
command. So you're playing your character on the ship. You're trying to get close. Things are coming in, but it's about the drama of being on the ship, not the drama of this ship moves here, this ship moves here, this ship moves here.
I've played fun Star and Sea Battle games. They're their own things.
Yeah. I feel like if we wanted to develop a game that does ship combat well, that's a different game. This game is about playing a character.
Yeah, it takes so yeah. much effort. Yeah.
The emphasis is on the story and the character.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all we got time for today, so we're going to wrap it up here. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you want to reach out to us, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/RPGFS. You can comment on every post we make, whether you're a patron or not. We'd love to hear from you.
You can reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/RPGFS.
You can find us on Twitter at homebrewhombres.
Or you can find us on Instagram at RPGFromScratch. That's one word.
Thank you, everybody, and until next time, stay safe, stand watch, and get a full rest.
Ka-ka!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.